You know that feeling when you're hiking on a dusty trail, you're looking at the trees, just kind of enjoying the day, and suddenly, out of the corner of your eye, you see a curved dark shape.
Coiled on the ground.
Yeah, just coiled right there. And before you can even form a word, before you even realize what's happening, your entire body just violently jumps backward. I
Right.
mean, your heart is instantly hammering in your chest, your palms are sweating, your breathing is shallow, and you haven't actually had a single conscious thought yet.
No, not one.
But then, a full second later, your rational conscious brain finally catches up. You look down and you go, oh, it's just a stick.
Yeah.
That's not a snake at all.
And for that one singular second, your biology treated that piece of wood like an absolute lethal threat. I mean, it pulled every physiological alarm lever it had.
Which is wild. And we usually just, laugh that off, right? You take a deep breath, your heart rate slows down, and you keep
Wait,
walking.
you recover.
Exactly. But what happens when that jumpy hair trigger alarm system in our brains gets stuck? What happens when it loses its off switch entirely? Welcome to the show. If you're listening today, learner, this deep dive is custom built for you.
It really is.
We are taking a really hard look at a massive, comprehensive piece of research from the OOTW Journal. It's a fascinating exploration of the neuroscience of fear, specifically looking at the amygdala and how psychedelics are offering this completely paradoxical new paradigm for treating things like severe depression and trauma.
I mean, it's a paradigm-shifting body of work. It really changes how we look at everything.
It does. And our mission for this deep dive learner is essentially threefold. First, we're going to break down the actual physical mechanics of fear in your own
Get
brain.
into the hardware.
Right, the hardware. Second, we'll look at the neuroscience of why traditional treatments so often leave people feeling incredibly flat and hollow. And finally, we're going to explore a major plot twist in modern neuroscience regarding how we actually heal, because it turns out pretty much everything we thought we knew about quieting the brain might be backwards.
Totally backwards.
So, to understand this paradox, we really have to start with that hardware you mentioned. We are talking about the amygdala.
Yeah, so think of the amygdala as it's a small almond-shaped cluster of nuclei, and it's sitting deep inside the temporal lobes, so roughly behind your eyes and pointing toward your ears.
Okay.
And we actually have two of them, one on each side of the brain. Its primary nonstop job is threat detection. I mean, it is the brain's smoke detector.
Right. And I always hear it called the fear center, like in pop science articles, but the journal frames it a bit broader than that, right? It's about salience.
Yes, salience is the perfect word for it. It scans every single piece of sensory data you take in to flag what actually matters. It's constantly asking one primary question, which is, what in this environment might hurt me? And the defining characteristic of this system, and this is crucial, isn't its accuracy, it's speed.
Right, like with the stick.
Exactly. When the amygdala fires, it recruits your entire physical body into a state of immediate readiness before your conscious mind is even aware a decision has been made. So it dumps stress hormones into your bloodstream, it redirects blood flow to your muscles.
And it forces your attention to narrow entirely onto the perceived danger. Like you get tunnel
You
vision.
do. You get absolute tunnel vision.
Okay, let's unpack the speed element of that because this goes right back to that stick on the trail.
Yeah.
How does the brain manage to react before it even knows what it's reacting to?
The journal highlights research by neuroscientist Joseph Ledoux, and he maps this out
Oh, it
beautifully.
really does.
He identified the anatomical shortcut that makes this possible, which he calls the low road. Right, the low road. So let's look at the routing of information in the brain. Usually, when you see or hear something, that sensory information hits a region called the sensory thalamus.
Okay.
Think of the thalamus as the brain's central mail room. So normally, the mail room sorts the package and sends it up the high road, up into the complex conscious
Where
cortex.
you actually think about it.
Exactly. The cortex opens the package, analyzes it carefully, and decides what to do. Oh, it's brown, it has bark, it's not moving, it's a stick. But Ledoux discovered that the mail room also has a direct emergency chute,
A low road.
the subcortical low road. It runs almost directly from the sensory thalamus straight down to the amygdala, completely bypassing the conscious cortex. It's an unrefined, messy signal, but it gets there fractions of a second faster.
I mean, it's the ultimate evolutionary hack, really. From a survival standpoint, the amygdala would much rather be wrong 100 times and make you jump at 100 sticks than miss the one time it's actually a venomous snake.
Exactly. Being jumpy is just incredibly cheap insurance for survival.
Right. But here's the problem. If the amygdala is a smoke detector, it sounds like for people dealing with severe anxiety or PTSD or depression. The smoke detector is going off just because, I don't know, someone made toast two rooms away.
Yeah.
Which is an exhausting way to live. But wait, why can't we just use the high road to fix the low road? Like, if our logical brain knows we're perfectly safe sitting in our living room, why do we still panic?
Well, because evolution dictates the hierarchy.
Yeah.
Biology gave us an alarm system millions of years before it gave us high-level reasoning. I mean, survival depended entirely on acting first and thinking second.
Oh, right. Because if your ancestors had to consciously deliberate over the shape and color of every threat in the brush,
they would have been eaten.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So the low road always wins the foot race. And that biological speed is precisely why logic constantly fails to talk us out of an anxiety attack or a trauma response.
Because it's already happening.
Exactly. By the time your rational mind realizes you are completely safe, the threat response has already flooded your nervous system with cortisol and adrenaline. The fire alarm is already blaring.
Wow. And when that fire alarm gets stuck in the on position, that's really where the pathology starts.
Yeah.
The journal points out that in anxiety disorders and PTSD, the amygdala becomes measurably hyperactive. It actually rewires itself to see threats in completely neutral faces.
That's right.
Like, you could be looking at someone who is just bored or deep in thought, and your brain literally screams, they hate me, they are a threat.
Right. And in major depression, we see a related malfunction. The amygdala over-responds to negative stimuli and severely under-responds to positive stimuli. It tilts the person's entire emotional reality toward the bleak.
Wow.
So the environment might be completely safe, but the internal alarm system has entirely lost its calibration.
Which brings us to the conventional treatments. The current medical gold standard for turning off that faulty alarm is the SSRI.
Right. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Yeah. Yeah, the daily antidepressants millions of people take. And the clinical goal of an SSRI is to dampen this amygdala hyperactivity over weeks and months, right?
Exactly. We aim to chemically normalize the overactive fear center. We basically just want to turn the volume of the alarm down.
And to be fair, they do help a massive amount of people function. They save lives. But the researchers in the OOTW journal point out a severe cost to this method. Patients report it constantly, this feeling of emotional blunting.
Yeah, it's very common.
Because if we look at the mechanism, SSRIs don't just magically target the fear response alone. They sort of lay a heavy blanket over the entire emotional spectrum. It's really a strategy of subtraction.
That is the trade-off with systemic dampening. You can successfully quiet the ringing alarm, which is great, but you tend to quiet everything else in the room along with it.
Right.
The deep joy, the spontaneous laughter, the sharp, vibrant edges of human feeling all get muffled. The fire's out, but so are some of the lights. So the patient survives.
Yeah.
But they're left navigating a much flatter, grayer emotional landscape.
It's just a muted experience of life. So this leads to the search for better tools, and specifically the first neuroimaging studies looking at psychedelics and the amygdala. Let's look at the 2015 study by Rainer Krahenman and his team.
Yeah, this is a fascinating one.
So they took healthy volunteers, slid them into an fMRI scanner, and gave them either psilocybin, which is the active compound in magic mushrooms, or a placebo.
Right.
And once the drug kicked in, they started showing these volunteers fearful, negative, and neutral images on a screen to see what the amygdala would do.
So let's focus on the acute window of this study, meaning what happened during the actual hours the participants were under the influence of the drug.
Okay.
Psilocybin acts primarily by stimulating specific serotonin receptors in the brain, known as 5-HT2A receptors. And what the fMRI scans showed was that under the influence of the drug, the amygdala's reactivity to those frightening images significantly dropped. Mm-hmm. The alarm rang much, much more softly.
Wow. And they also noted that the more the right side of the amygdala quieted down in response to the negative images, the more the person's mood actively lifted while in the scanner.
Exactly.
I mean, the drug just chemically relaxed that reflexive low-road alarm system.
The threat detection grid basically went offline.
Okay, so what does this all actually mean for the patient? I mean, if psilocybin just stimulates a receptor that turns the volume down on the amygdala, which is pretty much exactly what an SSRI does,
right.
Isn't this just the exact same strategy of subtraction? It's just doing it in an afternoon instead of taking 6 weeks to build up in your system?
You know, if we stop reading the research at that 2015 study, your conclusion makes perfect sense.
Right.
I mean, in the short term, the acute psychedelic state does look very much like a faster acting, incredibly potent SSRI.
Mm.
During the experience itself, the world feels unusually safe and expansive because the amygdala's vice grip on the rest of the brain is loosened. But relying on that acute dampening is a trap. That initial fMRI study just sets the stage for a much deeper, far more complex puzzle regarding the actual timescale of healing.
Right, because the story takes a massive, totally counterintuitive turn when researchers look at what happens after the drug wears off.
Yes.
The real shocker comes from a 2018 study by Lior Roseman and colleagues at Imperial College London. This time, they weren't looking at healthy volunteers. They were working with patients suffering from severe treatment-resistant depression.
Right, these are people who had tried everything else and were still suffering.
Exactly. They put these patients in the fMRI scanner before a course of psilocybin therapy, and then they scan them again the exact day after the heavy dosing session, when the drug is totally gone.
So consider the expectations going into this.
Hmm.
Based on decades of SSRI research, and based on the 2015 study we just discussed, the researchers assumed they would see the classic signature of a treated brain.
Right, a quiet brain.
Yeah. They expected to see a normalized, quieter, well-behaved amygdala.
But they found the exact opposite. The day after the treatment, when the drug was completely out of their systems, they showed these depressed patients emotional faces on the screen. Their amygdala responses hadn't decreased. They had significantly increased.
Spike.
The alarm was actually louder. And here is the real kicker of the entire journal piece. The patients whose amygdala lit up the most in the scanner the day after treatment, they were the exact same patients who reported the best clinical outcomes.
He's amazing.
They were the ones whose depression lifted the most.
It is a profound paradox that completely upends the traditional psychiatric model.
Yeah.
If we define depression purely as an overactive amygdala that needs to be silenced, why would a louder, highly reactive amygdala predict a massive recovery?
Okay, let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around this, Lerner. With conventional SSRIs, we're basically putting a heavy soundproof blanket over the ringing alarm clock. The noise stops, but so does the music in the room. You're numb.
Right.
But this 2018 study shows that the day after psychedelic therapy, the blanket is completely off. The alarm is actually louder than it was when they were depressed. How does turning the volume up cure depression?
It's such a good question. And it forces us to entirely deconstruct what severe depression actually is. We tend to think of it as just a loud, panicky alarm. But prolonged depression is also a state of profound emotional numbing.
Okay.
The nervous system becomes so overwhelmed that feelings are walled off, muffled, and held at a great distance from the self. If you treat that numbness by throwing a heavy chemical blanket over the whole system, you relieve the acute distress, but you leave the person clinically flat.
Wow. You're basically treating the symptom of pain by inducing emotional paralysis.
Exactly. Psychedelics appear to promote restoration by doing the exact reverse. They reopen emotional responsiveness. Think about the heightened amygdala activity the day after treatment. That isn't a malfunctioning panicky alarm returning.
Right.
It is the brain's baseline capacity to actually feel coming back online. It is reconnection. When the amygdala lights up at an emotional face, it means the patient is no longer walled off from the world. And it is that exact, raw reconnection that allows a person's stagnant grief to finally move through their body. You have to feel the grief to process it, and processing it is what allows the joy to return.
It's kind of like the difference between numbing a wound with a local anesthetic so you can ignore it versus actually scrubbing the wound out.
Yes, that's a great analogy.
I mean, scrubbing it hurts way more in the short term. The nerves are firing like crazy, but the anesthetic just masks the infection while the scrubbing actually allows the tissue to heal.
Look at the mechanics of what happens during that timeline. It beautifully resolves the paradox of the two different studies.
Okay, let's break that timeline down for a learner because this is the core of the whole deep dive. How do we reconcile the brain being totally quiet and relaxed in the scanner during the trip, but highly reactive and loud the next day?
Well, it all comes down to what happens during the temporary window when the alarm is paused. During the psychedelic experience, so the acute phase, that reflexive, jumpy, low-road threat response is chemically dampened by the stimulation of the 5-HT2A receptors.
Right.
This creates an incredibly rare temporary window of profound psychological safety. Frightening material, past traumas, deeply buried anxieties, repressed grief, it can all suddenly float to the surface.
Because you're not panicking.
Exactly. And because the amygdala isn't firing panic signals, the patient can actually look at these terrifying memories without being instantly overwhelmed by their own biology.
Ah, because the mailroom isn't sending everything down the low road emergency chute. They can finally use the high road to analyze the trauma.
Yes. Then, in the days that follow, the drug wears off and emotional responsiveness rebounds. It rises even higher than baseline. But now, that heightened emotion is attached to a mind that has actively processed the fear, rather than just fleeing from it.
This connects directly to the mechanics of memory, which the journal dives into pretty heavily. They talk about a concept called fear extinction and reconsolidation.
Right.
And it points out that this is the exact same underlying neural circuitry we see in how MDMA helps people with severe PTSD. Can we explain how reconsolidation actually works in the brain? Because it's not just, you know, getting over it. It's an actual physical rewriting of the hardware, right?
It is. Let's use a computer file analogy.
Right.
We used to think memories were like books in a library.
Yeah.
Once they were printed and filed away, they never changed. You just pulled the book off the shelf to read it.
Right. The ink was dry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But neuroscience now shows us that memory is actually much more like a Word document on your computer. Every single time you recall a memory, you're opening that file.
Okay.
The memory becomes unstable and malleable. When you are done remembering it, your brain has to hit save again to put it back into long-term storage.
And that process of hitting save again, that is reconsolidation.
Correct. Now imagine a patient with PTSD. Every time they recall their trauma, their amygdala floods their body with panic. The memory is terrifying. So when the brain hits save again, it saves the memory along with all that new panic.
Wow. So the fear just compounds.
Exactly. The fear gets stronger and more hardwired every time they think about it. The file gets corrupted with more and more anxiety.
But if you introduce a compound like MDMA or psilocybin, you completely change the state of the brain when the file is open.
The compound artificially induces that state of profound safety. The amygdala is quieted. So the patient opens the incredibly traumatic memory file, but for the first time in years, their body doesn't panic.
They can just look at it.
Right. They feel safe, held, and calm while looking at the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
They can process it. And then the critical moment happens.
Mm.
The brain hits save.
Oh, wow. It overwrites the file?
Yes.
It saves the old memory, but this time it saves it with the new biological tag of safety instead of mortal terror.
Precisely. The amygdala isn't being deleted or surgically removed. It's literally being taught a new association.
So the old danger is no longer a current threat. That is fear extinction. You are basically updating the software.
You're updating the software.
That is incredible. But, you know, it also leads to a really massive red flag.
Yes, it does.
If you are taking away the brain's natural evolutionary defense mechanism, if you are chemically silencing the smoke detector, couldn't that go terribly wrong if you are not in an actually safe place?
Absolutely.
Like if the amygdala is offline and you open that highly traumatic memory file in a chaotic environment or at a party or something, doesn't that just invite new, deeper trauma?
You've just hit on exactly why strict clinical protocols exist. And why the OETW journal places such a massive emphasis on safety cautions.
Right.
The science here is fascinating, but the medical community is very clear that these findings are not an endorsement for casual or recreational use.
And we have to look at the limitations of the data, too, just to be thorough. The Roseman study from 2018 was a small, open-label trial. There was no placebo control group.
Right.
And fMRI imaging, while amazing, is measuring indirect blood flow and connectivity. It's not measuring the raw one-to-one firing of individual neurons. So these are incredibly strong signals, but they are early foundational findings.
And beyond the data limitations, the psychological cautions are severe. The amygdala exists for a reason. Loosening our primary threat detector is not automatically a healing event.
Right. It's a vulnerability.
Exactly. If you reopen that alarm system in the wrong environment, or for someone with a personal or family history of psychosis or bipolar disorder, the destabilization can be catastrophic.
Wow.
Without the right psychological container, bringing traumatic memories to the surface can trigger a wave of raw, unmitigated panic and destabilization, rather than a safe reconsolidation of trauma.
Right. So this is the set and setting rule we always hear about in psychedelic research. It's not just about having like a nice playlist and a comfortable couch. It's a strict neurobiological requirement for memory reconsolidation.
Absolute containment is required. Reopening an alarm system without a safe container is dangerous. Skilled professional support is mandatory, not optional, because the goal of this entire therapeutic model is not to ensure there is no ringing from the amygdala.
Right.
The goal is appropriate ringing.
Appropriate ringing. We want to be alive to real feeling. We don't want a life without an alarm, because as the text says, a life without an alarm just means unnoticed danger.
Exactly.
We want the capacity to feel fear fully when we actually need to use that low road speed to jump away from the snake, and then, crucially, to have the emotional flexibility to set the fear down when the danger has passed.
And this brings us back to our starting point, really challenging our entire societal approach to psychiatric care.
Yeah.
For a generation, our dominant model has been subtraction. Turn down the pain, turn down the anxiety, blunt the edges, and just accept the flattening of the human experience as the necessary price of survival.
Which is so bleak.
It is. But this research points toward a paradigm of restoration. It tells us that mental health isn't about being numb to the world. It's about actively engaging with it, feeling the full spectrum of it, and having the emotional elasticity to process it.
It's a shift from just surviving the world to actually living in it. Learner, I really hope this helps you connect the dots on how your own hardware operates. And, you know, there's one more layer to this that I just can't stop thinking about as we wrap up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the journal briefly mentions how the amygdala doesn't act alone. It's constantly being interpreted by a cortex running its own predictions about what is dangerous in the world. It's a concept called predictive coding.
Right.
And it makes me wonder, if psychedelics work by creating a temporary window of neuroplasticity where an overlearned fear can finally be rewritten and saved differently by the amygdala, it makes you wonder about the rest of our personalities.
Oh, that's interesting.
Think about it. How many of our deeply ingrained habits, our stubborn knee-jerk reactions, or the things we just blindly accept as who we are actually just outdated, unupdated survival code just waiting for a safe enough environment to be rewritten.
That is the frontier we are standing on.
It really is. Thanks for diving deep with us today, Learner. We'll see you next time.